Okay, good evening, everyone. No handouts tonight. A little bit of a different style, since it is Chanukah. I thought it would be appropriate. It's a halacha shir, so we take a one week break from the halachos of Shabbos that we've been learning, and we'll learn a little bit about the halachos of Chanukah, and it'll be a little bit more of an overview of because we only have one shir. Next Monday night, I think, is after Chanukah already, right? So we only have one shir. So we'll try to pack in a little bit of an overview of Hilchos Chanukah. We discussed one topic this past Shabbos. We'll discuss maybe another topic more in depth this coming Shabbos. But just a little bit of an overview of the general halachos. I'm sure many of you are familiar with a lot of these halachos. It'll be chazara, you know, a little bit of chazara, and then hopefully some new additions as well. So we know we're celebrating the holiday of Chanukah. Couple things I mentioned the other night, last night here in Shul, that it's called Chanukah, and if you ask most people why it's called Chanukah, so the first thing that everybody says is Chanu Kafe, right? They rested on the 25th day, and that's the answer that many of us are familiar with. They rested on the 25th day. They rested, meaning from the finding of the Yevanim or whatever they were doing, and they rested from their enemies on the 25th day of Kislev, and that's why we celebrate Chanukah, or we begin Chanukah, at least on the 25th day of Kislev. It's interesting, I pointed out last night that the Maharsha in Shabbos says that that's not the real reason. You know, he doesn't address that reason, but he says the reason why Chanukah is called Chanukah is because of the Chanukah HaMizbeach. Because after all, after Chanukah, the Beis HaMikdash was defiled, we had to come, we had to reignite, you know, we had to rededicate everything. That was the Chanukah HaMizbeach. And that's why the holiday is called Chanukah, to commemorate and to remember that re-inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash and of the Mizbeach. It's interesting that some actually say that the Mishkan was also completed on Chaf Hei Kislev, and for whatever reason it was postponed, a little bit beyond the purview of this year, but it was postponed, at least the celebration and the Miluim and the inauguration of the Mishkan was postponed for until Nisan. We know that we celebrated around Nisan time. That's when the Torah describes it. But really, according to some authorities, it was really Chaf Hei Kislev. Okay, so we call it Chanukah. We know that the mitzvah is Simcha v'Halal, Halal v'Simcha, the way that the Rambam describes it. We say full Halal every single day of Chanukah, which is unlike Rosh Chodesh, even, which we have every single month. We don't say full Halal. Chanukah, we say full Halal because it's Yimei Halal. And it's also Yimei Simcha. We're supposed to be happy and enjoy ourselves. Nevertheless, there's a major distinction, as many of us are familiar, with between Chanukah and Purim. Right? Chanukah and Purim are both days of joy. Yet, on Purim, it's a very physical expression of that joy. There's an obligation to have a Purim Seuda. We're supposed to, we drink at the Purim Seuda. We give Mishloach Manos to each other. We give Matanos Lev Yonim. It's a very physically oriented expression of our Simcha. On Chanukah, it's not so physically oriented. The main mitzvah of Chanukah is Hallel and Neros Chanukah, right, which are both pretty spiritual. Hallel is just Hallel, and Neros Chanukah is lighting candles. It's pretty spiritual. Despite common belief, Sufganiyot and Latkes are not a Chiyuv on Chanukah. They're a Hidur, but they're not a Chiyuv. In fact, the Rama actually says that there's even no obligation to have a Suda at all. You know, many of us, I'm sure, have family Chanukah parties. That's a later day invention. The Rama says there's no obligation to have a Chanukah Suda, right? Like we have on Purim, we have an obligation on Purim Suda. We wash, we have meat, it's a whole big Suda. On Chanukah, you don't have to do that, right? If you want to, he says you can. It's a Rishus. If you want to have a Suda, you can. If you say Divrei Torah at the Chanukah Suda and you sing a little bit at the Chanukah Suda, some Chanukah songs, so that makes it into more of a Chanukah Suda. But otherwise, there's no obligation to have a Suda. So what's the distinction? So we know because Purim, Haman tried to kill us, right? He tried to kill us. He didn't care about Judaism, no Judaism. He wanted to wipe us off the face of the planet. So he wanted to kill us. He wanted to destroy us physically. So we celebrate in a very physical way. We celebrate that simcha. The simcha is expressed in a very physical way. Chanukah was completely a spiritual battle. Chanukah, we could have stayed alive. They didn't mind us being alive. They minded us keeping the Torah. Had we assimilated, had we adopted Hellenistic values and culture, they would have been completely fine with that, no problem. So because of that, since the victory was really more of a spiritual nature, so therefore on Chanukah we celebrate in a more spiritual nature, in a more spiritual way. Okay, The main mitzvah of Chanukah, as we discussed, is Hadlakas Neiros. Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah. It's a mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa. We're supposed to publicize the nace, the miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. And we know the miracle was that they found that little bit of oil supposed to last only for 1 day and end up lasting 8 days, and that's why we have 8 days of Chanukah. The basic obligation, which I also alluded to last night between Mincha Maariv, the basic obligation we know is an obligation of mitzvahs ner ishu beso. There's a mitzvah of one candle per household per night. That is the basic mitzvah, right? We're not familiar with this because nobody does that anymore. But that's the basic mitzvah, one candle per household per night. It's very interesting because this is one of the few mitzvos that's really a household mitzvah. A household mitzvah. Right, we have Neros Shabbos, perhaps also. Maybe it's a household mitzvah. You know, we discussed that a little bit in the Shiurim on Halakas Neros Shabbos. And Halakas Neros Chanukah. Otherwise, most mitzvos are individual mitzvos. You know, I have to do a mitzvah, so sometimes we do it as a group together. You know, we all have a mitzvah to make Kiddush. So usually we make one Kiddush, one person is motzi everyone else. But it's not Kiddush is not a household mitzvah. Kiddush is a personal mitzvah. Right? When it comes to Neros Chanukah, it's a household mitzvah. It really depends on the household. That's the basic obligation. We have an obligation that then the second level is called Mahadrin, where there, if you want to fulfill the mitzvah according to the Mahadrin, so then everyone in the household lights one candle per night. And then we have Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, where everyone in the household lights candles corresponding to the night of Hanukkah, which is what we do. Baruch Hashem, oil and candles are relatively cheap. We are relatively well off, and therefore we don't have a problem with this. We each buy candles and oil. We can all light two candles tonight, three candles tomorrow night, etc., etc. You follow Beis Hillel's opinion, obviously, ascending, corresponding to the days and not descending. It's interesting, when you think about women's obligation of Neros Chanukah, so women are obligated in Neros Chanukah just like men, because Afhin Hayuba Oso Anes, they were part of the miracle as well. Okay, now there's two ways of understanding that. Whenever we say Afhin Hayuba Oso Anes, there's always two ways of understanding it. Either women were included in the decrees and were saved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu the same way that the men were, or that the miracle actually happened at the hands of a woman. Okay? And we apply this to Pesach, we apply it to Chanukah as well. Why? Because Chanukah, we're all familiar with the story of Yehudis, right? Or Yehudit, whatever however you want to refer to her. And Yehudis, we know, the general approached her, and she said, sure, come on in. And she fed him some nice dairy foods, got him a little bit sleepy. He was thirsty. She gave him some wine. He got drunk. And then she, chick-chack, she took out her butcher knife, chick-chack. She took care of business. And because of that, that was the king at that point. And that was, according to some, that was the downfall of the Greek-Assyrian empire. Some actually want to claim that it didn't happen at the same time as the Hanukkah story. Interestingly enough, some claim that it was two totally different time periods, but since they were both, both stories happened with the Assyrian Greeks, so therefore we celebrate both around Hanukkah time. But be it as it may, someone suggests that women were actually the cause of the salvation. Because of this also, many have the custom of eating dairy foods, specifically on Hanukkah. So we have the custom of eating dairy foods because of this miracle that Yehudas fed him dairy and was saved because of that. Some women also have the custom not to do malacha while the candles are burning. While the candles are burning, right? It's a nice minhag. You should do it, right? Okay? Not to do malacha while the candles are burning. You're allowed to write. You can turn on the TV. You can turn on the lights. We're not talking about malacha like Shabbos malacha. But, any heavy-duty work, laundry or whatever. I recently said shopping, and someone said, shopping? That's not work. What's shopping? That's not a malacha. Right? Serving dinner. Okay? All right, listen, we won't get into this Shalom Bayis issue here, but that is a minhag of women not doing malacha during the time while the candles are burning, again, for the same reason, because Yehudas was so instrumental in whether it was the case, actually the story of Hanukkah or a related story, but either way, in celebration of that fact, we have that. Let me just finish the women, and then I'll get to your question. So women are obligated. Now, there are many different customs when it comes to how the obligation of women expresses itself. It really depends on the family. Sephardim, for example, I think the overwhelming majority of Sephardim, just ahead of the household lights, and very often many homes no one else lights. He just lights, that's it. and no one else lights, he's motzi everyone else in their obligation. Certainly his wife and even his daughters. I think in many homes even the sons don't light, just the head of the household lights. Ashkenazim, so we know that's not the practice. When it comes to Ashkenazim, I think the prevalent minhag is that the wives do not light, generally. Some wives do light. But even if the wives don't light, in many homes, the girls do light, right? Even if the wives don't light. And in some homes, you know, no women light. The wives don't light and the girls don't light. The logic behind that, I believe, is that hopefully we assume these girls are going to get married. And since when they get married, they're not going to light. So then they shouldn't light while they're single either. I think that's the logic behind that minhag. Again, they're all different minhagim. Everyone has their own minhagim. And, you know, their minhagim are precious to them. So whatever your minhagim are is certainly certainly totally fine. That's in terms of women. Yeah?
I thought the main miracle was the Yevanim's...
That's a whole discussion. What exactly, which one was the main miracle? Was the main miracle the milchama? Was the main miracle the Pach Shemen? In Al Anisim, we only discuss the, you know, we only discuss the battle. We don't discuss the Pach Shemen. Yeah. Not so clear, you know, which one was the main one, but that's certainly they're both important. Okay, if we think about the actual menorah, so really any type of menorah can be used. Doesn't have to be made out of any particular material. You can use there is a concept of hiddur mitzvah, just like any mitzvah. It's nice to have a beautiful to have a beautiful chefza shel mitzvah, a beautiful object of a mitzvah. So menorah is no different. So that's why many people have the custom to buy a beautiful menorah, a silver menorah. Many households have a silver menorah. It's certainly a beautiful type of menorah. But technically, any menorah works. You can buy a plastic one for $4.99 at Gourmet Glot, or you can buy, or your kid can make a wood one in school, and hopefully he doesn't hit his brother over the head. And you can light with that one. Any type of menorah really works. The Ramah does say that all the candles should really be in one straight line and should be the same height, with the exception of the shamash, obviously, which we'll talk about in a minute. And because of that, you know, that kind of rules out many Judaica artsy type menorahs. That if you go to Judaica stores or you look online, many of the artsy Judaica type menorahs are, you know, zigzags and semicircles and all sorts of interesting shapes and designs, which are beautiful, but not the ideal way of lighting Hanukkah candles. So ideally, you should really get, I still remember from my bar mitzvah, I think I got maybe two menorahs, and one of them was good and one of them was not good. So, you know, it all depends on who's giving you the menorah. But you try to have all of the candles lined up in the same height. An interesting halacha, which many people are not aware of, is that a menorah is not actually necessary. For example, if you're stuck somewhere, you're traveling, you don't have a menorah. You get stuck somewhere, you know, or certainly, I'm sure we all have heard stories about the Shoah and people lighting, you know, with potatoes and things like that. You know, when they didn't have a menorah, I've witnessed their boys in yeshiva who, for whatever reason, you know, their mother wasn't there to take care of them and they didn't have a menorah. So you can work it out. All you have to do is put eight candles or whatever night it is, put three candles next to each other. You have to be creative how to get them to stand up, but you melt the wax and you stick them on, or whatever the case is. Or honestly, you could even light tea lights, and just line up tea lights next to each other, and that could be your menorah. Not very glamorous, but you're certainly yotze with that type of situation. A menorah is not actually necessary for these purposes. When it comes to what we light with, So the halacha is that really any oil or wax can be used. We know that usually olive oil is used, and that's actually the preferable oil to be used. It's really the preferable method of lighting is really olive oil. Why? Because the miracle happened with olive oil. That was the miracle in the Beis HaMikdash, that was the little flask of olive oil, which is why olive oil is the fuel of choice when it comes to Hanukkah. But wax candles are certainly kosher. Any other type of oil, for that matter, really is kosher. One thing that's interesting, one discrepancy between Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Chanukah, is that electric or gas menorahs are really not kosher. So whereas when it comes to Shabbos, there are certain times when we rely on electricity and we use electricity for Hadlakas Neros Shabbos. When it comes to Neros Chanukah, it's really not the case. Because the whole miracle was done with real the menorah was olives and, you know, olive oil and wicks, and that was the way it was done. So we're trying to emulate that nais, and that's why we try to use actual fuel. Right. Right. So we'll talk a little more about people who are not at home in a bit. In short, if a person finds themselves in the hospital over Hanukkah, the best thing to do is have someone light for you at home. That's really the best thing to do. So if one spouse is home, have the spouse light, and you don't light anything in the hospital, and you're yotze with that. Again, because it's a household mitzvah, so that's why it's good. You're really yotze with that. It's also because of this reason, you know, for this reason, it's really advisable not to travel during Hanukkah if you can avoid it. You know, not everyone can avoid it. Sometimes people have to go away on business. I got some shilas already this year about people going away, flying, hotels and things like that. Very, very tricky, very complicated because, you know, you can't light with electricity. So if you're stuck in a hotel, unless it's in Israel and they're setting up a special place for Hadlakas Neiros, because everyone is lighting in Israel, okay, that's fun. That's one thing. You can do that. But if you're going to any other hotel, I don't think the Marriott in LA is going to let you light in the lobby or in your room. So I think it's a problem. And certainly on an airplane, if a person's on an airplane overnight and things like that, you're really stuck, and you kind of have to rely on people lighting for you at home, which again, you're yotze, but it's not the ideal. If you can avoid it, it's best to avoid it.
So the mitzvah is on. Personal mitzvah is in your personal house. So if you're not in your personal house, the mitzvah, you don't have the mitzvah.
No. The mitzvah is not necessarily in your personal house. The mitzvah is, if you're renting a house, if you're in a hotel room, you're essentially renting a house for the night.
So the mitzvah is where
So then the mitzvah
are.
Is where you are, but the problem is you can't really fulfill it there. Meaning if you were in a place where you could fulfill it, so then fine. So then, you know, like let's say a person goes away on business. Right? You know, somebody goes away on business, and let's say he rents a villa. Okay, and you know, so he can do whatever he wants there. So he lights a Hanukkah, he lights a menorah in his villa. His wife is lighting at home because she has to light at home, right? Because she can't be without a menorah in the house. And then he, wherever he is, he's lighting, you know, whatever. But if you're in a hotel and they're not going to let you light, so then you can't light an electric menorah. It's not going to do anything for you. So then you're kind of stuck. You have to rely on your wife's hadlaka.
But how does that help you? Because it's her.
Again, it's
her
not.
House.
It's
you're
it's,
not in your house.
Right. Right.
So, and you, if it's you and you, where you are.
Right.
And what's her doing in
right.
Her
so I mean,
you?
Again, that's why it's not ideal, and we try not to have that happen. But in the end of the day, you are, even if you're a balabayas, right? You have an obligation. So you can, for example, a person can appoint a shaliach to light for them, okay. Right? Let's say the person's not home, right? Let's say the person's not home, and. You know, let's say they're not home and their wife's not home either. Right? The couple goes away. So nobody's home and they can't light where they are. So they're stuck. What are they going to do? Right? But they have a chiyuv to light. They are homeowners. They have to light hadlakas neiros. So then, in that kind of a case, what the recommendation is, which is a little tricky, is that you have to get a shaliach to go light in your house. Right? Because you still have an obligation that every house has to have a menorah, you know, per sumei nisa. So there's a whole discussion. People have two houses and things like that. You know, all these things are discussions. But again, it's an obligation on the household. But you know, it's kind of a transportable obligation, because if you have two homes, then it's kind of, you know, it's two houses. So it's really both houses have the obligation in a sense. So you know, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
FYI, if you happen to be going to a hotel, you should ask if they have smoking rooms, because if they have smoking rooms, you could light a menorah there.
Interesting. Okay. All right, look at that, right? Smoking room, why not? Might smell a little, but it's worth it. Okay, we do say, and this again is something that's not so common, but generally we try to have all of the candles on one menorah of the same type. So for example, if you're using candles, use all candles. If you're using oil, use all oil. Don't start mixing and matching. You know, oh, well, I ran out of oil, so I'll just use two candles. You know, it's not the ideal. Better just to run to a store, buy some more oil, buy some more candles, instead of kind of, you know, a little bit of a hodgepodge menorah situation. Not everyone in the household has to light the same. You know, you could have one person lighting oil and one person lighting candles, but on the same menorah, they should be all the same. It's interesting. The people think that you have to change the wicks. I mean, nowadays a lot of people use these pre-made little, you know, oil, little oil cups, you know, because that's the way we are. So, you know, they found the market for it, and they're selling it, and, you know, it's, why not? It makes it easier. We don't have to clean out, you don't have to clean out the little glasses, and you don't have to worry about the mess and the dripping and things like that. It's a big mess. It's a big mess. So, you know, you pay the few extra bucks, and you buy the pre-made oils, you just pop them in, and you're good to go. So, but assuming you don't do that, if you do it the old-fashioned way, like the way I do it, you fill up the oil, you fill up the cups, and you put the wicks in, so then it's actually, the poskim say it's actually preferable to reuse the wicks the next night. Why? Why? Because they light better. Because once the wicks have been used, they're saturated with oil, right? You're going to light them the second night, the wicks, you have to fill the cup back up with oil, they're going to light, the wicks in themselves will light much better. Even last night, I put my wicks in right before I lit, and then I put my son's in the same time. I lit right away, and he lit a little while later. And his menorah lit better than mine. Little six-year-old, right? His menorah lit better than mine. Why? Because his wicks had time to sit and to soak up the oil, and mine didn't. So it's always preferable. It's ideal. You try to set it up a little bit in advance so the wicks, so it soaks into the wicks. Again, if you're buying the pre-made ones, you don't have to worry about that. They come pre-soaked. But that's the story with the wicks. We do light a shamish, okay? And one of the reasons why we do that is because we say in Aneiros Halalu that you're not supposed to benefit from the candles. You're not supposed to benefit from the candles. So because of that, we light a shamish, so that way if you know, perhaps we get some benefit. Usually the lights are on, we're not really benefiting from the candles anyway. But, you know, in a case where we're going to benefit from the candles, so we can say at least some of the light is coming from the shamish, not from the Hanukkah candles, so it's okay. And that's why we always light a shamish, even if you light with oil, you know, oil lights, so you're not obviously using that shamish of your menorah to light the other candles, because you're using a candle or a match or whatever to light the candles, but still we light a shamish, you know, for that purpose to take some of that hana away. We do, yeah.
So, you know, I'm laughing because it took us many years to figure out to use the candle, use the struggle with the oil. Don't
right.
ask; it's a long story.
Okay.
But there, in the Hanukkah, there's, you know, 8 candles. But
right.
There's also that space for the oil shamash.
Right.
So why is it there if you don't really need it?
So again, you need it in the sense that we try to have some additional light in addition to the actual Hanukkah candles, so that in case we benefit from the candles, we can, so to speak, blame it on that. You know, there's some additional light coming
like
in. Your token,
okay.
Yeah. Your token additional light in addition to the candles.
But you probably, when you make your brachas, if it's the third night, you should probably light the 3 lights. And then maybe when you're saying Aneiros Halalu or something, then light the shamish with your candle, because otherwise you're lighting 4 lights on the third night.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. So actually I'm not sure that this is brought anywhere la halacha, the exact order of when to light the shamish. Again, assuming that you're lighting with oil, and the shamish is, you know, you're not using the shamish to actually light the other candles, you're using a candle, you're just using it, you know, for the additional light. I think most people light it before. And the reason, the reason is because if you light it before you make the brachos, so then it's very clear that it's not part of your mitzvah. Right? I'm lighting it before I make the brachos. So obviously this is not part of the mitzvah. Now I make the brachos and I light my other 3 candles or 2 candles or whatever. If you light it afterwards, so I mean, you can make a hefsek and you can do it, you know, a minute later. But it's just, it's more clear cut. If you light the shamish first, then you make your brachos and then you light the other candles, so that way... I think also probably people do it because that's the way you do it if you're lighting with wax candles. You always have to light the shamash first, because that's how you're lighting the other candles. So people just got into the habit probably of lighting the shamash first, but I think it makes sense as well. There is a concept of huktzah l'mitzvaso, which means that once you have oil or wicks that was set aside for a mitzvah, you can't use it for any other purpose. And not only can you not use it for any other purpose, you can't really throw it out if it was used for a mitzvah. It's something that was used for a mitzvah. So because of that, you find certain people are very machmir with all the leftover wicks and all the leftover oil, that they gather everything together and they make a big bonfire, they save it for Pesach and with the Hoshanos. I don't know exactly what they do, but they save all the leftovers, you know, in one big cup or one big bottle for and they burn it at the end of Hanukkah instead of throwing it out. My personal minhag from my rav is that that only applies to a half hour's worth of oil. Okay, because we'll talk about in a minute that the shiur hadlaka is really a half hour. Right? That's really the shiur hadlaka. That's how long the candles have to stay lit for. So that's the real mitzvah. Anything in anything additional to that is extra. It's not part of the main mitzvah. That's extra. So if you have extra, if your candle's lit for a half hour and now they went out after, you know, an hour or 2 hours and there's a little extra oil, that's just extra oil. So you're allowed to throw that out. That's not oil that was used for a mitzvah or set aside for a mitzvah, because the mitzvah was only the half hour. So that's why he's makel that as long as the candle's burned for a half hour, you can throw out any of the remaining oil or wicks. Yeah.
For Shabbos, does the half hour apply for Shabbos also, or should that be longer?
You're saying if you have leftover oil from Shabbos, you mean?
No, for Friday night.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So there, it would have to be in a half hour after Tzeisa Kochavim. That's how you would judge the time there. We'll talk about that in a minute. But that's what it would be. Yeah.
So if sometimes happens when the candles goes out
right
shortly after
right
lighting, you can't put that candle out on Shabbos?
So again, if it goes out shortly after lighting, so we paskin that that Kavsa in Zakukla, which means that once the candle goes out, you know, even if it was only lit for 10 minutes, right? You don't have to relight it. As long as it was lit, you know, it lit well. It's not like it didn't catch. You know, sometimes it just doesn't catch. So we're not talking about that. It caught. It lit for a few minutes. And then it went out for whatever reason. You know, a big wind came, or, you know, your kid knocked into it, or it just went out. You know, it wasn't saturated with oil. So it went out. You don't have to relight it. If you want to, you can relight it. You know, Erev Shabbos, there's some differences. You know, might be a little bit different. So your question is regarding what?
My question is, can I throw that candle out after Shabbos?
You're saying because it didn't light a half hour.
Yeah.
So why after Shabbos? Any night.
No, well, I'm talking about Shabbos.
So no, but on a regular night, you're saying you would relight it.
So on a regular night, we could relight. But let's right. say Friday night, I'm talking about for...
You lit right before Shabbos. Right. And, you know, 10 minutes after you lit, it's already Shabbos now, and now the candle went out. So you can't relight it because it's Shabbos. But it didn't light a half hour.
Right.
That's your question. Yeah, so in that case, it would be a problem. The oil would be problematic.
What,
yeah.
what about Friday night candles? Just for Friday night? After 10, 15 minutes, for whatever reason?
Well, then there's no real shear for the candles. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. I'm not sure that they discuss it in that regard. If there's Huktzel Mitzvah by Shabbos candles. I'm not sure. Not sure. I got to think about that. Okay. The procedure for lighting. So if we talk about the proper time for lighting, there's actually a big machlokes, and I mentioned this also last night in the shul, there's a big machlokes when you should light. So some Rishonim held that you should light right at sunset, at Shkia, which nowadays is very early. It's what, about 4:30 or so, even earlier, maybe 4:25 or so. That's Shkia. So at sunset, that's when you light. Other poskim say, no, it means Tzeis HaKochavim. Right? You're supposed to light at Tzeis HaKochavim, which is when the stars, you know, three medium stars come out, which is it's a question exactly how many minutes after Shkia that is, but it's not, you know, it's only the Rabbana, we're not so Machmir, so already, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein lit around 15 minutes, approximately 15 minutes after Shkia, Rav Aaron Cutler lit around approximately a half hour after Shkia, so already at that time, 15 minutes, a half hour after Shkia, you can certainly light. So I would say, you know, certainly in Shul, if you come to Mincha Maariv, let's say, so we daven Maariv after Shkia, so by the time you get home, you know, you can light certainly at that point. It's already 20 to, you know, minutes, a half an hour after Shkia. You know, nowadays I would say about 5 o'clock, 5:15 is the ideal time for light. That would be Tzeis HaKochavim. It is proper, as I mentioned last night, it's proper to try to light at that time. Meaning, if you're home, you know, don't wait. You don't have to wait till 9 o'clock at night to light. You should really light right away at that time. You know, at about 5 o'clock, 5:15, if you're home and you can do it, it's best to light at that time. Of course, we do of course paskin that a person can light as long as there are people around to benefit from the not benefit in the hana sense, but to see the candles. As long as there are people around to see the candles, you can certainly light those candles, and that's why nowadays. Used to be that that time was much earlier because there were no street lights and people, already a half hour after Tzeis HaKochavim, people were no longer walking around in the streets. You know, it was dark. So everybody was home and that's it. So then really you could not light after that time because nobody was around. Nowadays, when people are around much later, you know, certainly if you live on a busy street, People are, you know, driving about till who knows what time at night. You know, living in Manhattan, people are, it could be the whole night. Maybe there's no tichle regel min hashuk, you know, because people are driving around the whole night. So then really you can light, as long as there are people outside, we'll see your candles, you can light with a bracha, no problem. You know, if you live in a quieter area, if you live in a farm somewhere, right, and there's no one around, so then it's a problem. So then really, as soon as people stop walking around, you can't light anymore. If you live on a quiet street or something like that, you know, you would have the same issue where after, you know, 8:30, you know, nobody's driving here. It's a dead end or something like that. And, you know, it's a private driveway, you know, and nobody's driving. So then it's a problem. If you have people at home who can see you light, so then that's fine. It doesn't have to be people from the outside. We know that in times of danger and anti-Semitism, people just lit on the dining room table, close the shades, and just light inside the house. As long as you have people inside, that's also a form of Pirsumei Nisa. And that's okay also, as long as people are up. But if you're coming back at 2 o'clock in the morning, and everybody in your house is sleeping, and no one's around outside, so then in that kind of a case, you would light without a bracha. You would not light with a bracha. If you know what's going to happen, you know, your wife can light for you, or your husband, or whatever, somebody can light for you at the proper time. But if no one lit for you, or you live by yourself, so then you would light without a bracha. I don't remember if I mentioned this story, but this actually happened to me. I witnessed it. I remember I was going back, I was learning in yeshiva in Baltimore, and I lived in New York, obviously, and I was home for Shabbos Chanukah. So I lit Sunday night. I was going back to yeshiva Sunday night, and I was stopping at a wedding and then going back to yeshiva. And I lit in my house, my father's house, you know, before I left Sunday night, and then I went to this wedding. There were some guys at the wedding who were also in yeshiva with me who were from out of town. One guy was from Seattle, so he had no place to light. He wasn't going to light where he was staying for Shabbos because he was leaving. You can't light if you're leaving there. But if you're staying for Shabbos, you light Friday, you can light Motzei Shabbos, you can light if you're staying there. But if you're leaving, you're not sleeping there Sunday night, you can't light there Sunday night. So he was. So he didn't light there Sunday night. He was going to light when he got back to yeshiva. We ended up, it was a whole, you know, story for another time. We ended up getting back to yeshiva about 4:30 in the morning. Interesting story, but for another time. So at 4:30 in the morning, no yeshiva guys are up, right? So he got back to yeshiva, and luckily we were there. Because we were on the, you know, we were all going together. So we went with him. We went with him to the dining room, and he lit with a bracha at 4:30 in the morning. And we watched his, we watched his hadlaka, and then I think we went back to sleep or something, you know. But that was it can happen. This kind of a case. Technically speaking, you can light until Amud HaShachar, which is until dawn. You can really light again if someone's around with a bracha. If no one's around without a bracha. Once it gets after dawn, and it's, you know, even before sunrise, you can't light with a bracha anymore. Even if people are around, you can only light without a bracha. And once sunrise hits, that's it. It's the next day, and you missed it. So you'll get them next time. But that's in terms of the Zman Hadlaka. On Erev Shabbos, we know that we light Hanukkah candles before Shabbos candles. The question of why that is an interesting question. It probably ties into the fact that at least for women, and some say even for men, lighting Shabbos candles is an acceptance of Shabbos upon ourselves, so we can't light Hanukkah candles after that, even though that's a little bit tricky, you know, based on our shiurim that we spoke about, when we spoke about Halakas Nero Shabbos. But be it as it may, we light Hanukkah candles first. We obviously cannot light them before Plag HaMincha, right, which is the time, also the earliest time for Halakas Nero Shabbos, which nowadays is not really a problem. It's an hour and a quarter of the halachic hours, the Shos Manios, before sunset. But it shouldn't really be a problem. Usually we light them right before Hanukkah candles, right before Shabbos candles, and you're okay. We have to make sure that they last, though, for a half hour after Tzeis HaKochavim. Because again, remember, that the Shiur Hadlaka, the amount of time that the candles have to remain lit, is for that half hour. So really they have to remain lit for that half hour after Tzeis HaKochavim. So, you know, Erev Shabbos, you have to either put more oil in. I mean, usually if it's a, you know, the pre-made ones last for like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, so usually you're okay. But if you're filling up the oil, make sure you put in a nice amount of oil that it'll last until a half hour after Tzeis HaKochavim. And if you're using candles, you know, it's a little tricky. You have to make sure you use longer candles. I remember as a kid, we used candles. So, my father lit with oil, but we used candles as kids. So Erev Shabbos, we all had these long candles that we would light. You know, you buy these extra long candles for Erev Shabbos. We even put them in the freezer. You know, I'm not sure what exactly, if that did help or didn't help, but that's what we did when we were kids. We put them in the freezer. And you have to make sure that they light, that they last until a half hour after Tzeis. On Motzai Shabbos, there's a big machlokes if you're supposed to do Havdalah first or you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles first. The reason why some say you should do Avdallah first is because Tadir v'sheino Tadir, Tadir kodem. Whenever you have two mitzvos, and one of them is more common or more, you know, consistent and regular than the other, so you do the common one first. So Avdallah we make every Motzei Shabbos, and Neiros Chanukah we light the Motzei Shabbos, you know, once a year, and eight nights the whole year. So certainly Havdalah is more Tadir, and that's the logic that we should light Havdalah candles first, that we should make Havdalah first. The other logic is that maybe we should do Neiros Chanukah first, because you really want to light, you know, at the earliest possible time. Again, we discussed that really, right at Seis HaKochavim, you're supposed to really be lighting. That's the ideal time. So maybe you should light as soon as Shabbos is over. Light, you say Baruch HaMavdil, obviously, or you say Tachon Antanu in Shmona Esrei. So Shabbos is over for you. And now, right as Shabbos is over, light your Chanukah candles, and then you make Havdalah. So it's a big machlokas what to do. In shul, we always light the Chanukah candles first, and then we make Havdalah. That's the minog that everyone has in shuls. That's what we do. We light Chanukah candles first, and then Havdalah. But when it comes to the home, so there are different minhagim. And the poskim say, either way you go is fine. Whatever your personal minhag is fine. So some people light Chanukah candles first, and then make Havdalah. Some people make Havdalah first, and then light Chanukah candles, and then light the Chanukah candles. If you don't have a minhag, or you're not sure what your minhag is, so then I would tell you to light Chanukah candles first, because there are probably, if you line up the shitos, there are probably more on that side of the argument, more opinions that are in favor of that. So if you don't have a minhag, you're not sure, you should light Chanukah candles first, but otherwise, you can, whatever your personal minhag is fine. Once the time for lighting has arrived, once a half hour before the time of lighting has arrived, so let's say you're talking about approximately, let's say, Shkia time, around sunset, because we're going to be lighting about a half hour, let's say, after sunset. So once sunset hits, so then a person should not really involve themselves in anything significant that's going to take their mind off of what they're supposed to do, and they might forget to light Chanukah candles. So you shouldn't, for example, sit down to dinner at that time, okay? You shouldn't sit down for your chavrusa at that time. Anything that's, any mindless activities, no problem. You know, those you can do. But an activity that's really, like eating, for example, right, which we take very seriously, or learning, which is something that certainly will take up, will take up your concentration, and you might lose track of time, you might, forget yourself, so then you can't do that within a half hour of this non-hadlaka, because we're afraid you might forget to light the Chanukah candles. That's why, eating dinner is a little tricky, especially if you're waiting for someone to come home, and you're not eating dinner right away, you're not lighting right away, so then it gets a little bit tricky also. What you can do in that situation, if you know, like, let's say, for example, that your husband or your wife is not coming home until 9 o'clock, and the Zman HaLaka is at 5 o'clock, and I'm not going to eat dinner for 4 hours, I mean, what am I going to do? I'm going to starve. So in those cases, what you can do is you can either ask someone to remind you, okay? You appoint like a shaliach to remind you when the time comes at 9 o'clock, remind me that I have to light Chanukah candles, so that way, even if I forget, or if I, whatever happens to me, I'm eating, or I fall asleep, or I forget, that person's going to wake me up and remind me that I have to light Chanukah candles. Or you can set an alarm. And if you set an alarm, especially, we all have our smartphones now, if you set an alarm, you can even set it to say, light Chanukah candles. It says it on the screen, light Chanukah candles. So then that would be okay also. Just make sure that it's loud, so in case you fall asleep, it'll wake you up, and you're not going to sleep through right till the morning, because then you'll miss Hadlakas Neiros. Obviously, if you want to have a snack, that's totally fine. You can have a snack, you can have something small to eat, just not to sit down to like a real dinner, certainly not with bread and washing and things like that, then you get into a lot of problems. In terms of where we place the menorah, so we all know that originally, in the times of Chazal, the menorahs were placed outside the home, on the left side of the door, the mezuzah is on the right, and the chanukiah is on the left, and this way you're surrounded with mitzvos. And we all know that in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag is that they still do that nowadays. Unfortunately, over time, in Chutz La'aretz, the minhag changed because of anti-Semitism, because we were afraid of what the Gentiles would do to us if our menorahs were outside our homes. And therefore, we ended up lighting inside, and originally they lit inside with the shades closed. They didn't light by the window inside because they would get a rock through their window or something of that nature. So they lit inside on the dining room table. And again, you have your family around. That's Pirsumei Nisa. And that's how they lit. So nowadays in Chutz La'aretz, the general minhag is that we have some sort of a compromise that we light, inside, but we light by the window. Some people in Chutz La'aretz do light outside still. Some people, like to kind of, taste that Eretz Yisrael feeling. So they buy the box and they have the menorah in the box and they light it. Some people light two menorahs because, you know, the minhag in chutzlaretz is really to light inside, but I want to light outside also, so they have two menorahs, and then, you know, then which one do they make the bracha on? It's a whole interesting question, but that's generally where we what we do in terms of lighting. In terms of the procedure of lighting, so basically what we do is we light, again, I mentioned we light the shamash, and then you make the brachos. First night we made three brachos, we made Shechianu, the rest of the nights we make two brachos. And then you begin from the leftmost candle, like the newest candle. You set them up right to left, and you light left to right. That's right, yeah. It is. Good question. It's backwards. In a shul, we do things differently.
Oh, okay.
Because in a shul, we're modeling ourselves after the Mishkan, or after the Beis HaMikdash, so that's why the menorah is on the southern side of the Aron. Okay? And we light, and it is kind of backwards. So you light backwards. You do in a shul.
Okay.
You light backwards. Yeah, correct. Yeah, you're good. Don't worry. But that's generally, that's how we light. We make the brachos. If a person theoretically forgot to make the brachos, as long as you have at least one candle left to light, you can make the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. If you finish lighting the candles already, you can still say Shas Anisim as long as the candles are still lit, but you missed that bracha of Lahadlik if you forgot to light it.
So let's say the husband and children are home at 5:30, but the wife isn't coming home until 10 at night.
Mm-hmm.
Should they light at 5:30?
So again, it's a good question. Right, it's a good question. It's a good question. In that type of situation, you know, it's a tricky thing. There's no clear-cut answer as to how long you should wait, how long you shouldn't wait. Certainly the ideal is to light at Tzeis HaKochavim. But if the husband or wife is not around at that time, and we do generally husbands and wives light together, so, you know, you can wait for each other. But you're worried about the kids or whatever the case might be. So if it's going to be really late, and again, each family might be different as to what they call really late, but if it's going to be really late, then generally what we do is we just, you know, have the person light, you know, have, let's say in that case, the husband will just light and have his wife in mind. You know, he'll have his wife in mind and she doesn't have to be there, you know, and she's the Yotzei the Hadlaka, even if she's not home. You know, if she'll be home in an hour, so wait an hour. But if she's not going to be home until very late, so then that's what I would do. If someone's away, so we mentioned it briefly, but just basically the idea is that if you're away, so again, it depends, you know, where you are and how you are and everything like that. So obviously, if you're going away and you're not sure, ask a shayla. But generally, if you're going away and you're really going to be, you know, you're going to be bekvius in a certain place. So for example, you're going away for Shabbos. So you're going away for Shabbos, so you know you're going to be in one place. You're going to your kids for Shabbos, you're going to your parents for Shabbos, you're going to your brother for Shabbos, whatever the case is. You're going to be there Friday night, you're going to be there maybe even Motzei Shabbos. You're going to be there, you're eating there, you're sleeping there, so that's your home. That's your home for, you know, for Shabbos. And in that kind of a case, you can light with them. There's all different, you know, you light there, basically. There's different shilas about, there's different opinions, you know, joining up with them and giving them a pruta so you can join in their hadlaka. Nowadays, our minhag, basically, is that everybody lights their own. You light in that place where you are. Again, if you're leaving, or you're, you know, like Motzei Shabbos, for example, is an interesting question. Friday night, certainly you can light, you know, before Shabbos, you can certainly light there. But let's say I'm leaving Motzei Shabbos. This happened all the time when I was in Eretz Yisrael, when you're learning in Israel. So you go away to someone's house for Shabbos, usually you don't stay over Motzei Shabbos, you know, unless they offer you. But, usually you don't ask them to stay over Motzei Shabbos also. So you're leaving Motzei Shabbos. So where should I light? I'm leaving Motzei Shabbos, right? Where should I light? I was sleeping here last night. I ate here the whole Shabbos, but now I'm leaving. I'm going back to Yeshiva. I'm going back to my dorm on Motzei Shabbos. So what do I do? So there, many of the poskim say that since you were there the whole Shabbos, so what you should do is you should, you know, have Malava Malka there. So not only, you know, you gotta, can I light here? You know, also do you have any bread? You have any challah? You have any chalent? You know, for me. So you can if you eat Malava Malka in the person's home. So even if you're not sleeping there that night, it's already a little bit of a kvius because, you know, I slept there the whole Shabbos and I'm eating Malava Malka here. So then you can light there. But if you're really just running out right after Shabbos, then you should really, really run out right after Shabbos, go back to where you are, you know, your yeshiva or your home or whatever, and then light when you get home. That's really the ideal thing to do. But so again, it all depends. You know, these kind of shalas are a little tricky. It all depends where you are and when you are. So if you have a particular shala, ask. Certainly you're welcome to ask. Those are the basic halachos. Anything that I didn't cover, feel free to reach out to me. But those are the basic halachos of Chanukah. Have a wonderful evening.